Welcome to the Scaling Tech Podcast, the podcast for software engineering leaders. I'm Aaron Syme, your host, and today I'm speaking with Doug Ramirez, an experienced engineering leader and software architect, about how to lead effective one-on-ones. As leaders, one-on-ones are one of the most powerful tools that we have to connect with our team members, identify roadblocks early, foster growth. But without structure and intentionality, they can become just another meeting. Doug has developed a thoughtful approach to make these conversations impactful, actionable, and meaningful for both managers and their teams. If you're looking to improve how you lead your team and build stronger relationships with them, you won't want to miss this conversation. So let's dive in.
Welcome to the Scaling Tech Podcast, where we help you manage your growing engineering team. Through expert interviews, we help you navigate the challenges of leading, hiring, growing, and nurturing your tech team to deliver the value your customers demand. Brought to you by AgilityFeet.com, experts in staffing engineering teams in Latin America for clients globally.
Doug Ramirez is a software architect, engineering leader, and consultative trusted advisor with extensive experience across diverse industries, including energy, financial services, healthcare, communications, and manufacturing. For today's episode, we'll talk about how engineering leaders can lead successful one-on-ones with their team. Thanks for joining me today, Doug, and welcome to the Scaling Tech Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Aaron. Nice to see you.
It's always a pleasure to see you. We go back quite a ways, and so really happy to have you here on the Scaling Tech Podcast today. Now, you said in there's an article that you wrote about one-on-ones that'll be kind of the focus of our conversation today. I got a lot of great insights from that, and so I'm really pleased to have you here kind of sharing that with us. And one of the things you said in that is that one-on-ones are one of the most valuable tools for any manager. And so I want to ask, like, why is structure so essential to making them effective?
So in my experience, you know, not only in just in software engineering, but a lot of things in life, that in order for something to become a habit, you have to practice it sometime. And what I found in dealing with, you know, engineers on my teams and other people around me, my peers, is that having a process to follow really helps start to build some muscle memory around that habit. And so if you practice, you know, what I've been doing, I think it starts to take away some of the cognitive load, so to speak, so that you can really kind of get into the meat of really understanding what's going on with the people that are working with you, for you, and around you. And so this process, which, you know, helps guide that, I think is a great way to start to build that habit. And not only for you as a manager or a leader, but it also does the same thing for the people on your team as well. At least that's been my experience.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, before we talk more about the details of one-on-ones and what you recommend around that, I want to back up a little bit. You and I have worked together in the past, as I mentioned, so I have a lot of respect already for your engineering leadership skills and experience. Oh, thank you. But for those who don't already know us and don't know you, could you share with our listeners a little bit more about your background?
Sure. I'll try to distill about 35 years into a few bullet points. So I like to always open up, you know, talking about myself by saying that I have a lot of gratitude for the opportunities that have been given to me in my career. So starting with, you know, my first introduction to computers, which was when I was a little kid. My dad was a mathematician and statistician, and so I had access to computers before most people did, actually. This is the early to mid 70s, so I'm dating myself a little bit. And I went to school knowing that I wanted to be a computer programmer, and I've had some really great opportunities. My first job out of school was with a very large company called General Electric, and I got a lot of really great training there, not only in engineering but also just in management and in process, you know, business process reengineering, things like that. I was able to meet some wonderful people and start a business. I've built some great connections through that, and I've done some consulting as an individual since then, and as an employee since then. And during that time, you know, as you mentioned, I've been able to work in a lot of different industries and for a lot of different companies of different sizes. So I think I have this really fortunate vantage point to really see how lots of different businesses, lots of different organizations of different sizes across a lot of different industries use IT and software to solve problems. So, and in that time, I've been a business owner, I've been a director, I've been a manager, I've been an individual contributor, I've been a principal, I've done lots of different things, and I've dealt with lots of different operating systems, lots of different databases, lots of different languages. And I just have this fortune of being exposed to so many different things. And I think it gives me the ability to solve problems in new spaces, because I can lean into, seeing how manufacturing did something, or financial services, or entertainment, or how something was used in a particular language. So, across that time, 35 years now of writing software professionally since I graduated from college, I just have this wonderful list of experiences and people I've been able to work with. So I, every day I show up just knowing that this is really fortunate. I've got a ton of gratitude, and I also just really, really love writing software.
Yeah. And you do have, experience a lot across a lot of different industries. The industry that you and I worked together in was the music industry, which is, was really interesting. I mean, for me personally, in my background, I don't know about you, that's probably still the most unique place and industry that I've worked in. Every now and then has allowed me to name drop a couple of famous names to my kids and try to sound cool, but they know better than that. exactly. But one thing that, that industry is not well known for, I would say, is a lot of structure, right? It's a very creative industry. But it's the industry where, in that company, when we worked together, was where I had a lot of my early management experience. And it was great because I was given a lot of opportunity, which was wonderful. There weren't very many people in the organization. You were an exception to that, of people who had like good management experience and leadership experience from outside of that company or industry. And so there wasn't a whole lot of opportunity to learn from others in terms of like how to be a good manager or how to do things like one-on-one. So I think perhaps because a little bit of that, maybe self-taught bootstrapped entry into management that I had, I don't approach a lot of these things with one-on-ones. And so that's where your article about this caught my attention, because I don't think it's something I'm particularly good at personally, but I really appreciated the structure and the high level approach that you gave to that. So let walk us through some of that.
Yeah. So I will say that, this process, this methodology that I've been using for a while now, really is kind of an amalgamation of some things that I learned when I was at General Electric. And again, just a ton of gratitude for being exposed to some very formal management training. That's where I learned about things like situational leadership, servant leadership. And then even, as recently as, 7 or 8 years ago when I was working at Tucows, when I kind of decided to pull all this together and really put it into practice, was some training we were doing around giving people feedback. And that's where the SBI, the situation, behavior, and impact. Yeah, so I think, and this is at the beginning of the article, there's a couple things that I'm really trying to achieve during, using this technique during a one-on-one. It's giving time for, you as a manager and the people that are working with you or for you to really kind of reflect on the work that they're doing at the moment and the broader impact. One of the things I really tried to emphasize when in doing one-on-ones is that I didn't want it to be a check-in on tasks. I really wanted it to be a check-in about you. Like, how are you doing? How do you feel about your job? Do you understand where you fit into the organization? Do you understand what our goals are? What do you need? All of those things, really just trying to zoom out from that typical that I'll call one-on-one, where it's like, where's this? Where's this? Where's this? And not to say that those are bad techniques. Like, I don't want to discourage people from doing those things if it's effective. But for me, I just found that trying to do things a little bit differently and bring in these things like situational leadership, servant leadership, SBI, I found that it provided a much richer experience, not only for me as a manager, because I got a lot of information from the people that are working for me and around me that I wouldn't normally get if I was just running through their task lists. But I think it also, it kind of forced me to walk the talk, right? So like when I talk about servant leadership and I talk about situational leadership, if I'm not really leaning into the people that are around me and saying like, what are you, like, how can I help you? Like, what's going well? What's not going well? How do you feel about your work? Do you understand where like the work that we're doing, how it fits into the overall goals of the company, whether you're using OKRs or some other goal setting met, you know, framework. And then also just kind of forcing me as a manager to be a human being. And, you know, one of the things that we emphasized a lot at the company that I started, our consulting company, was that we really wanted to make sure that we put an emphasis on human first, resources second. And so, you know, setting some time aside to ask somebody like, hey, how are you doing? Like, how are things outside of work? And doing it in a thoughtful way that doesn't really encroach or violate some HR policies. It's not about that. It's really about being a human being and trying to empathize with people to understand, like, is the quality of the work they're doing might be being impacted by something outside of work that I might not catch if I'm just saying, like, where are you on this? Where are you on that? And it doesn't necessarily need to be something bad. It might not be that somebody says, like, I've had a death in the family. They might say something like, hey, I'm getting married soon. Things are going really well. And you can kind of see that reflecting in their work.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I know you talked about several principles for successful one-on-ones in your article, and I think some including consistency, asking tough questions, creating a safe space. Which of these do you think is hardest for managers to master and why?
It's interesting. I would say, you know, not the hardest thing, but certainly being remote. I think that one of the things that's been hard is consistency. I think that we're all familiar with this, you know, running late from a Zoom meeting and hopping onto the next one, and we lose that time in the hallway. And I think there might be some allowance where people feel like they can slide things around because you might not see somebody in the hallway or across the other side of a room where you're now going to feel like, oh, I'm supposed to meet with that person and now I'm going to shuffle my schedule around and impact them. I think the hardest thing, honestly, is creating a safe space. I think, you know, initially when I was thinking about your question just now, I thought, boy, asking the tough questions is hard. But I will say that I think the tough questions can be sourced. I think you can lean on people around you to say like, hey, I want to dig into some work that this person's doing. Help me craft some questions to really kind of find out what's going on. I think you can source those questions and kind of follow that script, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But I think creating a safe space is really the hardest thing to do because that's where you really just have to be a human being. and you have to have had all of the miles and the hours and the experiences to know, you know, when should I like really start digging into this? Kind of leans into the situational leadership aspect of this. Like, when should I start perhaps moving into a micromanagement model? Or where am I maybe doing something a bit more detailed where I really need to kind of zoom out and just let this person run with it? So I think creating the safe space is actually the really hardest part of it.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think one of the things that you talked about that also caught my attention along those lines was starting the conversation with wins and frustrations as a good way to build trust. And because I think I'm certainly guilty, many of the one-on-ones that I'm in or leading, it becomes too task oriented. And it's kind of like, what have you got for me this week? What do we need to cover? You know, and it's hopefully in the spirit of how can I help you? But it's very sort of heads down, day-to-day focused. But I like that idea of starting with wins and frustrations. Expand on that for us.
Yeah. And, you know, now that you're mentioning it and just hearing you talk about it, I almost think that maybe I should go back and try to refine that a bit more to really kind of put the emphasis on wins. My hope is, and it's hard to do, is that I love this idea, and this is very aspirational. I love the idea of thinking that somebody's going to get excited about a one-on-one. Right? Like, I would love for the people that are working for me or with me to know that, hey, when I talk to Doug, I'm going to get to talk about something good. I'm going to get to talk about something I've done that's awesome, right? And I think that works for most people. It may depend on whether you're an introvert or an extrovert, but I like this idea of trying to start each conversation off with something positive, keeping it light, you know, giving people an opportunity to say, here's some things that I've done that I feel really good about. And then not like putting any judgment on that at the time. You can always do that later in a structured way. But the reason why I like to start with wins is because I kind of want to start the conversation by having dessert first, so to speak, right? Like get somebody excited to come to the table knowing that they're going to get something awesome right away. And then hopefully over time it conditions, you know, you as the manager and perhaps you as the employee to kind of get excited about it. Like, take a breath. We're not going to dig into something awful. Let's talk about something that's good that's going on. And I don't know what other people's experiences are like, but when I started doing this, the feedback I got from people was that this is really nice. I get to show up and talk about something that I'm doing that's going well, as opposed to just the usual one-on-one, which is, where are you on this? Where are you on that? So I think it really just, for me, it kind of sets the tone for the conversation, but hopefully over time, conditions you as the manager and the people on your team to think about, this is good. This is a good thing. I get to talk to my boss. I get to talk to my manager about stuff that I'm doing that I'm really proud about.
So over time, do you then work in more of the frustrations, or how do you kind of get them to be comfortable with that part of the conversation as well?
Great question. I'll say that in my experience, what I found is that I think people are often, at least in my experience, I think people are usually easy to share frustrations. But I think over time, as people get used to this process, this methodology, and they dig into their wins, I think they become a bit more forthcoming about the frustrations. And you know, I think I talk about this in the article, and we can talk about this here, is that, you know, practicing this process so that it becomes a habit, I think allows people to, after a period of time, start to really understand that, you know, I can be really honest with my frustrations. And I might get a little bit more information that I might not have gotten if I had just gone right into tasks. So that's where I think that's really the crux of it.
That makes sense. Now, I think you mentioned SBI also in the article and in your conversation, in situation, behavior, impact. Tell us a little bit more about that, like, framework for feedback.
So again, this is something that we, you know, I've heard about SBI before, but it was something that Tucows, you know, at Tucows, the company, they taught this to all the managers as a way to try to give people feedback. And by the way, it's not only feedback for things that aren't going well, but it's also a way to give positive feedback. So it's feedback in general. Okay. The one thing I'll say about SBI, and this is true for this process as well, is that it's just a tool, right? And going through SBI or using SBI isn't the goal. The goal is really to try to figure out a way to give somebody feedback clearly, concisely, in an objective way. And it's hard to do. And, you know, being remote, it's even more difficult. So situation, behavior, and impact, it's a way of kind of describing something that you may have observed. Like, what was the situation that you were observing? Like, you know, maybe an engineer was in a whiteboarding session with some other folks. Mm-hmm. And the behavior you might have seen is that they might have told you that they had an issue with the architecture, but in that meeting, they were being silent. And the impact was that the other team didn't get to hear their valuable input. So as a manager, if I can go back to somebody and say, like, hey, I just want to give you some feedback in this meeting, the situation, I know that you have this opinion and you didn't share it, that would be the behavior. And the impact was, you know, your other peers didn't get to hear what you have to say, and it's really important. And I think it's just a nice mnemonic, right? SBI. And it's just a nice tool to give managers, especially new managers, a way to provide feedback. And it's hard to do. And again, I think just like this methodology and a lot of other methodologies and frameworks, it's one of those things where if you practice it over time, it becomes a habit and you start to forget about what SBI even is. You just get into that mode of being like, hey, this is this thing. This is what I observed, and this is the impact of it. Like, do you agree or not? And that's the other thing that I like about SBI, is that it's a way, and if you do it well, is to say, like, this is the situation, the behavior, and impact that I observed. Do you agree with that or not? And then you can have a conversation around those things. And I think it's just a nice tool for a manager to have in their toolbox. And again, I think it's one of those things that as the people that work for you and around you, they'll start to get into that pattern. Like, oh, now Doug's giving me some feedback and he's going to explain something in this way. I can grok on that really easily because I'm used to hearing about the situation, the behavior, and the impact. And then maybe in turn, they can use that tool as well. So they can provide feedback, especially to the manager, which is something that is part of this methodology, is to say, like, how am I doing? What can I do for you?
Yeah, and I like that framework too, because it especially as people get used to it and know sort of the format and both sides of the conversation, it emphasizes it takes the emotion out of the conversation a little bit, right? Like, as a manager, I might be frustrated with the behavior I saw, you know, this person exhibit, right? Yeah. But this is a non-emotional sort of structured way that I can present to them, you know, the impact of that and why, and in a way that, you know, does not include a lot of emotion in it. So hopefully that takes attention out of it for everyone.
It does. And, you know, you bring up a really good point, and that is that, you know, it's hard to take emotion out of it completely, right? Like, because we're human beings, and a lot of times, you know, you might be being praised for something. You're going to feel really good about it, which is awesome. And you might get some negative feedback that you don't like, and you're not going to feel bad about it, but you're a human being. I think over time, hopefully it kind of takes away that knee-jerk reaction, like, oh my gosh, I got told something I didn't like to hear about myself. And right. So I think just repeating this, you know, you start to get used to the idea of like, okay, I'm going to be told something, and this is how I'm going to be told what it is, and I'm going to have an opportunity to respond. So I think the framework hopefully just takes some of the emotion out of it, because it's predictable, right? Mm-hmm. Like, when I have a one-on-one with my manager, I know that during this process, I'm going to get some feedback and I can give them some feedback. And this is how we do it, right? It's a known entity. It's a known quantity. This is how we do the thing. It's predictable. Therefore, I can prepare myself mentally for hearing something I might not want to see, or telling my boss something that they might not want to hear.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I like that a lot. I mean, it shows the value of the structure. I mean, I think for me personally, my default conversational style is pretty casual, right? I want to talk to people like they're a friend, right? Mm-hmm. And that's great around the water cooler, so to speak. But, you know, in a setting like this, it maybe doesn't prepare someone who, you know, reports to me for the conversation. And so when I do need to bring up something more negative, if they don't have a structure around that, then they, you know, they may have a harder time knowing how to kind of react or what's coming next from it. And even worse, if as a leader, you know, you're doing feedback only at annual reviews, right? So not only having a structure, but having this consistent pattern so that I know if we're talking, you know, weekly, monthly, whatever it is, at least I know that there's going to be this point, and it's not tied to a salary review or something like that.
That's a really good point. I'm actually going to make a quick note of this. And that is that, you know, part of what drove me to really kind of come up with this was that, gosh, I don't know how many years ago this was now, but at Two Cows, we had a new chief people officer come in, wonderful person. Their approach to annual reviews was similar to mine, which is they really don't help. One of the reasons that really kind of drove me to start thinking about this methodology, and it's something I've been thinking about for a long time, is that I think you should have, you know, 52 performance reviews every year, right? And that it shouldn't be an annual thing. It's just a continuum. So one of the goals that I'd like to try to achieve, and I want to go back to this article and maybe enhance it a little bit, is to say, like, this is a way to give constant performance feedback. Right. That way there's no surprises. So even if you're in an organization that does quarterly or annual reviews, there's some kind of cadence. Boy, does this go a long way to remove those surprises. And if anybody's surprised, then, you know, either I as a manager didn't do something right, or the employee got lost on something. But I really do believe that this goes a very long way to letting everybody know, like, me as a manager, me as an employee, like, where do I stand? How am I doing? I get that feedback every single week in a very consistent way. And my boss shows up every time, because consistency is key.
Right.
So I think that's a big part of it, actually. I'm glad you brought that up.
I want to take a moment to tell you about our sponsor, WebRTC Ventures. At WebRTC Ventures, our teams are experts in building live video into your web or mobile applications. We've literally built hundreds of them. We have over a decade of experience using both open source and commercial media servers in a wide range of industries, including telehealth, edtech, broadcasting, and more. We also publish a lot of helpful tips and industry interviews on our website and our YouTube channel. So be sure to check out WebRTC.ventures, and we can help you build, scale, and deploy your video solution.
Oh, well, thank you. And, you know, you talked a few minutes ago, too, about the importance of this being a two-way conversation, mm-hmm. and also the, you know, the employee providing feedback to their manager. Talk a little bit more about that two-way aspect of the conversation.
Yeah, so I will say that, you know, one of the things that I mentioned in the article is this idea of setting aside some time to give the employee some feedback using SBI, but then explicitly asking, you know, the person that's working for you or with you to give you feedback. In my experience, what I've found is that the first few times you do this, you don't get a lot of feedback from the other person. Mm-hmm. But over time, I think as they become familiar with, this is the way that we do our one-on-ones, maybe hopefully the starting with the wins is starting to kind of grow some legs and starting to get people excited about coming into the one-on-one, that they feel a little bit better about giving you feedback. Mm-hmm. And there's also, you know, another part of this process where, you know, I say, what can I be accountable for the next time that we meet? So explicitly asking the person to put me in a situation where I'm being a servant leader, like, how can I help you? Tell me what's going on. Are you stuck on a ticket? Are you having an issue with another employee? You know, do you have something that's going on outside of work? Like, can I help you in any way? And I think it really kind of forces the manager to walk the talk. Like, I want to be a servant leader, but I'm going to be explicit about it. Like, what can I do for you between now and the next time that we talk so that I can set you up for success?
No, that's great. And it sounds like you're specifically using the word accountable with them and emphasizing that this is something that, you know, you want them to hold you to, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's fantastic. When you're, do you vary the structure or the content or anything different based on either like different roles or different seniority of roles?
I do. And again, this definitely goes back to, you know, my early days at GE and the management training there and this idea of situational leadership. Just real briefly, it's the premise of situational leadership is that if you look at really good leaders, you'll often find that they don't have a way of managing people or leading people. They usually have about four. Mm-hmm. And, you know, on the one of the quadrants, it kind of puts you in the micromanagement space. And the one thing I will say is that I don't believe that micromanagement is necessarily a bad thing if it's used in the right situation.
Yeah.
And if you have somebody who doesn't really know what the goals are and they may not be equipped and really know what to do, stepping in and holding their hand a little bit, it's very, very appropriate. And it sets them up for success. Now, if you have somebody who knows what the goals are, they already have the skill sets and they're off and running. If I start to micromanage them, I'm just getting in the way. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, putting that into practice on the one-on-ones, you know, I will definitely bring that style of conversation. You know, the tough questions I ask might be a little bit different. You know, I might expect a senior person to really know what our OKR is a bit more than somebody who may be a bit junior. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I like to do to kind of test myself to see whether I've really set them up for success by explaining what the goals are is that, and I don't know if I put this in the article or not, but one of the things I like to do is say, hey, do me a favor and pretend I'm somebody new to the company, maybe on a different engineering team. Tell me what our OKRs are. Like, do you know what this quarter's OKRs are? Mm. And I think that's just a really interesting way to see, like, have I explained it well? Has the company explained it well? Does the organization, do we all know what we're talking about? And so, like, again, like, if it was a senior person, like, let's say a principal, like, if they're not able to say, like, these are things we have as targets, like increasing revenue, decreasing costs, something like that, then I'll start to maybe dig in a little bit more with them. But if a junior person, let's say, isn't able to rattle off the OKRs, that's fine. So, yeah, I think I do try to, as best as I can, you know, alter the style of the conversation, what those tough questions are, my expectations of their answers a little bit differently depending on, you know, that person, their situation, their skill set, the newness of a project, whatever it may be.
Yeah, that makes sense. And maybe, you know, varying it too based on past commitments that they've made in other one-on-ones, right? Mm-hmm. You know, if they say, hey, I want to get better at understanding the big picture, then if they don't know the OKRs, then that's kind of a, you know, it's a little bit of a way to hold them accountable, right? You know, if you don't know what we're working on, how are you going to understand the big picture, right? So let's talk about that more and finding a way to do that that's still, you know, a collaborative, not a slap on the hand type of way, I suppose, too.
Yep.
But yeah, I like your points too there about the different sort of communication styles in there. It's, you know, it's like as leaders, we always have to, most of us have a default leadership style that we like based on our personality, but we all have to have multiple in our toolkit, right? There's a time where you want to be very collaborative in your leadership style, not forcing your own agenda, really drawing ideas out of the team and, you know, that sort of thing. And then there are other times where you need to be very, very directive in what you say. You know, the easiest example usually is, you know, in a time of crisis, right? The team is looking for a steady voice, perhaps, in a time of crisis. And so saying, this is the direction we're heading. Now help us get there. But, you know, this is the direction that we're going, right? And that sort of steadiness, you know, can be important in those moments too. So similar in these ongoing conversations and the one-on-ones on a smaller scale too, I imagine.
Yeah. And, you know, people are hard, right? Like it's hard to do. And I'd like to think that, you know, especially for, you know, newer managers that, you know, this is a great way to start to build some muscle memory around, like, how do I have these conversations? How do I get feedback? How do I give feedback? You know, the responses I've often gotten from people when I walk them through this the first time is, wow, I've never had a one-on-one like this before. And it's usually a positive kind of wow. Like,
right.
I don't think I've ever really gotten any pointed negative feedback about using this approach. I want to say the vast majority of the time, when I've used this with teams, people have said, this is awesome. Like, I think they really appreciate the space. I think they really appreciate the accountability as a servant leader. I think they appreciate having the time set aside and not make it be like, I just want to run through your task list.
Right.
And I've also gotten feedback from other managers who said, man, this is really great. Like, I was really struggling with my one-on-ones. People didn't seem to be very engaged. I wasn't sure how this person was doing or feeling about their relationship with the company until I started doing this for a couple of weeks. And now I have a better understanding of how they think they fit in. What do they think the goals are? How do they think they're doing? Things like that.
Doug, one thing you've emphasized, and I want to reiterate that again, because it's so important, is never canceling one-on-ones with your team members. But of course, life and work are going to get in the way. So, you know, how do you handle situations where, you know, back-to-back meetings or urgent work challenges kind of disrupt that consistency, or how do you minimize the potential of that, I suppose?
Yeah. Yes. You know, networks, unfortunately, aren't reliable. So things happen and break. I think for me, it really comes back again to the human part of this. And when I've had to, and believe me, I've had, and, you know, and I've had people who have said, you know, to me, like, hey, Doug, I can't make it to the one-on-one. I try to make it very apparent to the person that, like, this is my fault. I'm very sorry. Like, I asked you to set aside time and prepare for this conversation, which is incredibly important, right? This is kind of a mini performance review, really, really important conversation. I try to emphasize that, like, you know, I'm sorry. This is not going to be a pattern. Right. And then I do my best to say, like, when is the next most convenient time for you? And I will accommodate your schedule. What I really don't like, and I've experienced this, I think we all have had, is a manager who just ghosts you on a one-on-one, and then you have to chase them down, and then you try, and then you have to find the time on their busy calendar. And it just, it's not a very pleasant experience. It's not a very human experience. It doesn't feel very good. It
doesn't make you feel very valued, right?
It happens all the time. It's interesting that you're asking the questions around consistency, because a lot of the questions I often get from other people is like, you really can't ever cancel these? And I'm like, no, you can't. I mean, these are people. Like, it's the most important asset in the company, right? So, like, let's give it that priority. But yeah, things happen. So when it does happen, I try to remind people of the importance of it, respecting their time, and doing my best to make it on me to find the next available time. Like, you give me 3 or 4 times and I'll find one that's convenient. I don't want to share my calendar with you and have you dig around and find it. That's just not pleasant. So yeah, being very apologetic, reminding people of the importance, reminding myself of the importance, and then making it as easy as possible to follow back up with them and then have that, you know, that very important conversation.
Yeah, I like that. Don't make them chase you if you're the manager.
Exactly. That's perfect. Yeah.
One of the other things that, you know, along the topic of making sure that these don't become, you know, like a one-on-one stand-up of going down a task mm-hmm. list. Mm-hmm. I like how you talk about ending your one-on-ones by asking about quality of life. Expand on that a little bit. You know, how does that kind of create a better work culture, a better team culture?
Yeah, boy, I there's a lot to unpack there. That is something that that I and my business partners at Dominion Digital, the consulting company that I started years and years ago, we spent a lot of time talking about QOL, quality of life. I think for me, the hope, the aspiration there is to really make sure that we're putting human first and human resources. Mm-hmm. I will say that it's one of the more challenging things as a manager and as a person working for somebody else or an employee to really kind of lean into, for a couple reasons. One is there are some HR implications. Like, you need to be mindful and careful about the types of questions you ask. But at the same time, I think that, at least in my experience and a lot of people's experience, they don't often get those questions. So when I let some time in the conversation, a nice long pause, and then say, like, hey, how are you doing? That often like takes people a moment to respond to, because they're not used to being asked that, especially in a one-on-one, because it's like, aren't we running through the list? I thought we were just going to run through the list. Why are you asking about me?
Right.
And I will say that, you know, getting feedback, getting performance feedback from people about how I'm doing as a manager often takes lots of repetitions of going through this and getting people comfortable with the process and just knowing that this is what the conversation is going to be like every week. I will say the quality of life one is often a hard thing to get out of people. I think there's some people that are maybe very willing to tell you, like, oh, you know, my kid's birthday is this weekend and blah, blah, blah. But I really do believe, and I would be really curious to hear what other people's experiences are around this. I think it just creates some empathy both mm-hmm. ways, but especially as a leader. Like, if you really do believe in servant leadership and you're like, I work for this person, then the best way for me to help them be successful is to really understand not only how they're doing at work, but how are they doing outside of work? Because let's face it, like, those lines tend to blur, especially these days with remote, right?
Yeah.
Because most of us, you know, a lot of us are working in our homes. Mm-hmm. We're not in an office where we can just turn our laptop off and walk out the door and just leave it all behind you. So I think understanding how somebody's doing with their life, like, how is their quality of life? Is the relationship with their employer getting in the way? Is it enabling them to do some things, maybe like, oh, I really love the flexibility that we have on, you know, a Flex Friday that we have once a month because I can go do this thing that I've always wanted to do. I just think it creates some empathy, and it just puts some humanness in it, and it helps you understand. And my hope is that, and I think I can say with confidence that I've experienced this, is that over time people start to open up to you because they start to see you as a person, right? You're not just a manager showing up on a screen saying, like, tell me where you are, probably late on some things. Requirements probably aren't very clear. You're waiting on DevOps or something, right? The same old story.
Right.
This gives you ability to talk about, like, hey, how are you doing? And I can also share some things that I might have going on with me.
Yeah.
Just so people might understand, you know, like, maybe I was short, or maybe I was really excited, or maybe I'm in a great mood, or maybe in a bad mood, but just helps people frame some things so that you can understand a bit more context. I can't remember the exact phrasing of this saying, but it's something like, you know, every time you meet somebody, they're probably fighting a battle that you might not mm-hmm. see. Right. And I think it kind of leans into that to give you some space to, like, understand, like, are they fighting a battle? Like, should I give this person some grace and latitude because of something that's going on? And then just being a human being to say, like, how can I support you with that? How can the mm-hmm. company support you with something that may be really difficult? But if you hadn't asked that question, like, how are you doing? you might not understand, like, how can I help you? How can the company help you? So it's a hard thing to do, again, because, you know, there are some nuances you have to be careful of. But I think once you do it, at least in my experience, I feel like people warm up to it and it starts to create a much more natural, organic conversation about how the work is going, how they're doing, what they need help with, et cetera.
Yeah. I mean, the first few times you ask that question, you might just get the classic meaningless fine as an answer.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
I'm fine. But doing it over time and building that rapport over time and hearing someone ask you that repeatedly, eventually you're going to open up a little bit more. So, yeah, I think that's great. Yeah. It makes me think too, because I try to, although I don't use a specific question like that of, you know, quality of life, I do try to make sure that, you know, asking things that are, if it's how was your weekend, it's at least with a more meaningful intent or trying to remember. And I know, like, for me personally, I'm terrible at remembering things like names and little details and people's kids' names and stuff like that. So I'll try to, like, you know, give myself a couple of notes after that too, just to help me make sure that I remember, you know, ask about this next time, you know, this person's name, that sort of thing. Of course, you know, like you said, there's human resources issues here too. You know, you can't go write that on the whiteboard and leave it in the meeting room, that, you know, somebody's struggling. And it may or may not be an issue that is something that should be handled in the workplace, but you can at least try to be aware of it and create, you know, space for it. And
that's the key, right? Is creating the space for it. Like, this is not a rhetorical, how's your weekend at the water cooler? This is literally pausing for a moment during the one-on-one, taking a breath and saying, like, now I want to hear about you and how you're doing. Like, it's very intentional.
All right. Well, Doug, this has been a great conversation. I want to ask you one more question as we wrap up here. For managers who are either new to management, new to one-on-ones, or this is the first time they're considering, wow, I should put more structure into mine and I want to kind of roll out some of these ideas that Doug's talking about. What's the best way to introduce a more structured one-on-one format to your teams?
So a couple of thoughts there. One is kind of zooming out a little bit. The goal isn't to run through the process. The goal is to have a very effective one-on-one. Right. And to set people up for success, to give people feedback, to get feedback, to understand how people are doing, empathize with them, understand their relationship with their employee, et cetera. One of the things that I've done is that I would suggest doing, if you're a new manager and you're going to do this, or even an experienced manager and you're going to introduce this. What I've done, which has been successful, is I usually meet with everybody and I have like a one-on-one where I basically say, like, here's how I'd like to do one-on-ones. And I explain the process and I do a very quick dry run. Like, let's just practice. Like let's do one. It's going to feel weird, right? Like, you may not feel like it helps, but, like, let's do a dry run. And then after I've done that with everybody, I'll kind of announce to the team, like, hey, you know, I've spoken with most of you by now. But just as a reminder, this is how we're doing our one-on-ones, because I think it's important for peers to understand, like, how are they getting feedback? And hopefully maybe things like SBI start to show up in their conversations that they're having. And, you know, I think, again, don't give up on it. Like, if it feels weird and it feels clunky, and if you ask questions like, can you give me some feedback? And people are like, no, I don't want to do that. Or if you ask them how they're doing and they're like, fine, that's okay. Like, just keep repeating it from week to week. And in my experience, I think it eventually catches on. Like I said, I've almost always gotten really great feedback, especially from the people who are like, man, this is so great. Like, thank you for like asking, and thank you for like letting me give you something to do to help me. Yeah. So, you know, it's not about it's not about going through the process, it's about achieving the goals. Introduce it to people, have some fun, like do a dry run, let it be very playful, and then just keep at it for a while. And then what I would also say is, you know, circle back with people every now and then and just say, hey, how do you think this is going? Especially in the case where you might have somebody who, over, let's say, a month or two, where they're really just not answering the questions, like they don't seem to be engaged in the one-on-one. Like, call a timeout and just say, hey, my observation, like SBI, right? Like right. We're having our one-on-one. I'm not getting a lot of information for you, and it's making it hard for me to set you up for success. Like, I want you to be successful and I want to be a resource for you. Like, tell me what's going on. And, you know, and if it gets really bad, you know, then I would say start to lean into maybe some more experienced peers around you, or maybe even your HR folks. And, you know, I think there's also the option of going to some other people on the team and saying, like, I think you are engaged in this process. What do you think about people who aren't? Like, what do you think we could do differently? So, you know, again, ask for feedback.
Yeah.
And see what people think.
All right. Well, Doug, thank you again so much for an excellent conversation. Are there any other closing thoughts that you want to share? And if not, how can our listeners learn more or get in touch with you?
Sure. So I'm on LinkedIn. I have Doug Ramirez. I was an early adopter, so I got my name. It's not Doug Ramirez 1974.
Right.
You can always reach me there. The article is on Medium, and it's if you go look at my profile, you'll see where I posted it there. I would really love to hear from other managers. Honestly, you know, Aaron, the feedback I've gotten from other people are usually like peers I've worked with and managers I've worked with, and they're friends of mine. So of course they've said, this is great, Doug. But I would really like to hear some people perhaps offer some different opinions about it or critique it. I'd love to evolve this process. I've made a few notes as we've been talking. Like, I'd like to go back and maybe reword some things. Like, I'd like to put a bit more emphasis on wins as opposed to wins and frustrations. Mm-hmm. I'd like to make sure that people start to treat this as like, this is part of the annual performance review process. So find me on LinkedIn, go read the article. It's a short article, promise. And I'd really love to get some feedback from other people who maybe have a different opinion or who've been, you know, been similar techniques, et cetera.
Perfect. Well, we'll be sure to link to both your LinkedIn profile and the article on Medium from our show notes for this episode at scalingtechpod.com. So if you're listening to this, be sure to give us a follow and be sure to go check out those show notes, get to those links, give Doug a follow, and give him some feedback on how do you do one-on-ones? What do you find effective? What are your wins and frustrations with one-on-ones? Doug would love to hear it.
Oh,
so
that's great. Great way to put it.
All right. Well, Doug, again, thanks so much for joining me the Scalin' Tech Podcast.
Of course.
On behalf of the thousands of developers we've placed with our clients, I want to briefly tell you about our sponsor, Agility Feed. Agility Feed has been building nearshore agile teams for U.S. companies since 2010. We were an early pioneer in doing this sort of developer staffing. Our team can help you recruit talented software engineers and technical teams in Latin America. We'll handle all aspects of recruiting, contracting, and payments for you so you can focus on delivering great software. To learn more, check us out at agilityfeat.com. That's agilityfeat.com.